From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
House lawmakers in Juneau gathered last week for a special meeting on the latest fishery disasters issued by the federal government last month. More than a dozen fisheries in Alaska were designated as disasters by the secretary, including the Gulf of Alaska's cod fishery in 2020. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports that there aren't easy answers either to speeding up payments to fishermen or the future viability of Alaska's fisheries.
14 fisheries across Alaska were approved as disasters between the years 2018 and 2021 by the Federal Commerce Department last month. That's a lot, Alaska Department of Fish and Game Deputy Commissioner Rachel Baker told members on the House Fisheries Committee on Tuesday.
Since about 2008 or 9, the volume of disaster requests appeared to increase pretty substantially from across the country, not just Alaska. Up until that time, from the 90s through then, quite often there was one or two a year requests for the whole country for the whole year.
She said the state is still trying to understand the growing volume of fishery disasters. More fishermen could be accessing federal relief through disaster designations compared to previous years. But in Governor Mike Dunleavy's most recent disaster request,
we did note the warming ocean conditions in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska as a potential contributor.
Alaska's Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang told lawmakers his agency is trying to better understand what he described as a general decline in ocean productivity. He says Alaska scientists are currently working with their Russian counterparts as part of that assessment, and the state agency is using federal disaster money to invest in more comprehensive research. There isn't a standing fund to pay fishermen impacted by fishery disasters. The money has to be allocated by Congress. And skippers and crew who applied for financial relief for fishery disasters in 2018 are just starting to receive checks. Kodiak Republican House Speaker Louise Stutes questioned the slow pace of payments actually getting in the hands of fishermen through the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission.
It seems like Alaska is always the last place that gets paid.
But that's not something the state controls. Fish and Game doesn't have the administrative staff to process federal relief on its own. And Baker says that's a typical timeline throughout the country, not just in Alaska.
As currently structured, the process to provide fishery disaster assistance is cumbersome and slow to execute. We understand and share the frustration of Alaska fishery participants and committee members.
She said there is movement at the federal level to revamp the fisheries disaster program. Meantime, Alaska fishermen eligible for federal financial relief from the latest disaster designations will just have to wait out the process. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Fishermen in the Bering Sea reported spotting at least two North Pacific right whales about 80 miles from Unalaska earlier this month. Scientists say it's likely the first visual evidence of the highly endangered whales feeding in the Bering Sea in winter, and they're urging fishing boats in the area to exercise caution. KUCB's Hope McKinney has the story.
Josh Trosvig is the captain of the Cerulean, a 58-foot boat currently fishing for cod in the Bering Sea near Unimak Pass. And on a bright, sunny day earlier this month, out on the water, he was on the boat drifting and waiting for the tide to change. And then he spotted something that looked like a large tote bobbing on the surface of the water, about 300 feet from his boat. It turned out to be a group of whales.
I've seen a lot of whales, thousands, tens of thousands of whales, and you know, 35 years of fishing out here, and this was unique. I've never seen whales feed like that.
Trosvik says the whales would pop their heads up and roll along the water's surface like a bulldozer for minutes at a time. Feeding behavior he says he's never witnessed before. At first, he says, he thought they might be bowhead whales based on their color and size, but he wasn't sure. So he took out his phone and recorded them. Then he sent the video to an assistant area management biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Unalaska Dutch Harbor.
I firmly believe that knowledge is power, especially when it comes to the oceans. We know more about the universe outside our solar system than we do about the depths of our own oceans. And for proper fisheries management and ecological management of the oceans, it's critical for all of us to work together, you know, from the commercial industries, from container ships to fishing vessels, you know, working with NOAA and National Marine Fisheries and Fishing Game to, you know, be good stewards of the ocean and notify them of something like this.
Right whales are among the rarest of all marine mammal species and have never been documented in the Bering Sea in winter months. Now, there are three different types of right whales, the North Atlantic, the Southern, and the North Pacific. And the North Pacific right whales are split into two stocks, the Eastern and the Western.
The Western right whale is over in Japanese-Russian waters, and they number somewhere in the low hundreds, maybe 300 to 500 animals. The Eastern stock is critically endangered.
Scientists estimate there are only about 30 animals left in the Eastern stock. That's because the large baleen whales became the target of whaling in the 1800s.
And it's estimated that anywhere between, you know, 25 and 35,000 animals were taken in just a few decades. And so that brought the population to, you know, maybe around the high hundreds of animals. But then in the 1960s, the Soviets began hunting right whales illegally and took over 700 additional right whales. And that decimated the population and brought it down to what we think are their current numbers of roughly 30 animals.
Krantz, who has been studying right whales for more than a decade, says the eastern stock feeds in the southeastern Bering Sea during the summer months. But because there are so few of them to track, where they go the rest of the year is still unknown. And because there's still so much about this population that scientists still don't know, she says even a single sighting like this increases their knowledge considerably.
Prior to this, we assumed that they all migrated south, much like every other large whale population.
Now, because of Trosvik's video, researchers are thinking some of the whales may stay in the Bering Sea through the winter. That knowledge helps them continue to monitor and study the right whale population, says Krantz. NOAA Fisheries is also now working with the U.S. Coast Guard to urge boaters to be careful in the area of Unimak Pass, which is a major transit zone for ships not just in and out of Dutch Harbor, but also to the rest of the world. And Krantz says she's hoping fishermen will continue to document the whales when they see them and send photos and videos to Fish and Game or NOAA.
And again, because they're so critically endangered, every animal is crucial to the health of this population. And every sighting that we get, it helps, you know, put one more piece of the puzzle together to try and understand the migration and movement patterns of these animals.
Reporting in Unalaska, I'm Hope McKenney.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The governor's task force to review the effect of bycatch in Alaska's fisheries is working to organize against its tight timeline for submitting recommendations to state and federal policymakers. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, it also has to balance commercial and subsistence interests.
Bycatch is when fishing vessels catch something they're not targeting. It could be tanner crab in a black cod pot or halibut scooped up in a pollock trawl net. It's been an incendiary issue in Alaska's fisheries for decades. Now, as stocks of crab, salmon, and halibut decline, trawl fisheries have come under fire for their role, which represents the vast majority of incidental catch in and around Alaska. The governor's office took notice. Governor Mike Dunleavy established a task force late last year with a deadline to submit its recommendations in November. But during that time, the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force also has to establish its own priorities, break into subcommittees, and decide what it's going to focus on before its mandate expires in just 9 months, and there's a lot of information to sort through already as it plays catch up. At an almost six-hour meeting Friday, the task force heard presentations from state and federal fisheries managers and questioned them about existing bycatch data. Kevin Delaney holds the seat on the task force designated for sport and personal use fishermen. He said the task force needs a clear focus to be effective.
If we just start throwing data at the wall, hoping something sticks, we're just going to spend the next nine meetings doing the same darn thing that the North Council's already done and the Board of Fish has already done.
Over the last year, some of the loudest voices advocating for action to reduce bycatch have come from tribal organizations in western Alaska, in communities that have seen subsistence salmon harvests dramatically reduced or stopped entirely. Even early on in the task force's process, frustrations are simmering about who's in the loop. Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission's Mary Poltola said she wasn't notified of the meeting in advance.
If there were real interest in hearing from the public, there would be a real effort, you know, put to letting the public know when and where the meeting is happening and how to provide their opinions or their feedback. The composition of the task force, the timing of the task force, 100% of the task force is a campaign charade.
Peltola questioned the need for a task force at all. She says the Dunleavy administration, through the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, already has tools to manage fisheries to give relief to struggling subsistence stocks. But others expressed optimism. At its Friday meeting, the bycatch task force heard from a variety of fisheries stakeholders, including a number of trawl fishery representatives, who say they're already using best practices to avoid bycatch. United Catcher Boats, which represents pollock and cod trawlers, says its members are collecting data and are willing to share findings with the task force about what it's found keeps salmon, halibut, and crab out of nets. But UCB Executive Director Brent Payne also told the task force he doesn't see much room for improvement.
I got to be honest with you, I don't know if we can do a better job than what we're doing right now.
Payne explained the bycatch limits and system in the Bering Sea pollock fishery are very motivating to boat captains already.
Every single tow that goes in the water in the pollock fishery right now in the Bering Sea, those captains, the first thing they're thinking about is what the bycatch rate is.
While it's required to be reported, there isn't a federal cap for chum salmon bycatch. Last year, federal data show trawlers in the Bering Sea scooped up more than 500,000 chum, pink and silver salmon, and almost 14,000 king salmon. In the Gulf of Alaska, groundfish harvesters took even more king salmon as bycatch, but that does fall within federal limits for king salmon bycatch. Even so, critics say it represents tens of thousands of fish that aren't in smokehouses, feeding predominantly native communities in western Alaska. Karen Poletnikoff called in to demand concrete action from the task force. She's an Anchorage-based program director for the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, which represents some of Alaska's most remote coastal communities.
It's really about the only thing that we do control, and that is the bycatch.
When discussing how to divide subcommittees, the task force discussed dividing by fishing sector or by species. Poletnikoff questioned why the force would give an outsized influence to the trawl industry.
The industry has had the chance to mull it over themselves, amongst themselves, before and will continue to. But this opportunity to hear from the public is unique.
Across gear groups, both Alaskans and representatives of the Seattle-based trawl fleet called for a clear problem statement for the bycatch task force to address before it goes any further. The task force assigned half of its members to get started on that. The next meeting of the bycatch task force is scheduled to take place over teleconference March 9th. By then, there may be a clearer idea of what the governor's bycatch task force will attempt to accomplish before its deadline to report back in November. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.